Good morning and welcome. First case before us this morning is AERC Sawmill Village versus the Franklin County Board of Revision and others. Mr. Lindholm?
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, my name is Jason Lindholm with the law firm of Siegel, Siegel, Johnson & Jennings, and I am here this morning on behalf of the appellant, AERC Sawmill Village, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The issue before this court today concerns the application of revised code 5713.01B, which relates to the mandatory duty of the county auditors of the state to reappraise property at least once every 6 years. The appellant believes this duty was, the statute was violated because of a carry forward of a settlement for a case before the Board of Tax Appeals, wherein the first tax year of that case related to tax year 2002. When the County Board of Revision was instructed by the Board of Tax Appeals to carry forward according to law, according to its stipulation of value order, the Board of Revision interpreted that to mean that the carry forward should go all the way through every year up until the time that the Board of Tax Appeals finally rendered its decision. However, encompassed within that time period was a reappraisal period for Franklin County, which occurred on the sixth year from the previous reappraisal period in 2005. What the appellant believes is that the mandatory reappraisal period that the auditors have no choice but to do at least once every 6 years was not given its full force and effect, and therefore—
Counsel, would you have us write a rule of law that would said that the mandatory duty or the mandatory reappraisal always trumps the carry forward?
Yes, we would.
Okay.
And we believe that that rule for carry forward should only apply to a triennial period. And I will get to more of our argument as I go forward. We have more reasons for that.
Is that a legislative prerogative to determine that the carry forward is only for a 3 year period and not a 6 year period?
Well, some of the case law seems to reflect that. However, what we believe is there's a conflict between the mandatory reappraisal, which has to take place every 6 years, and the statute under 5715.19D, which talks about carrying forward values through successive years.
It's logical to carry forward the value, but if that value is always to be carried forward, it would in effect moot the auditor's responsibility to reappraise property, and you would never have an auditor reappraising property every 6 years because we would simply apply a carry forward. So,
yes.
So where is the break between the duty of the auditor and the statutory obligation of carry forward?
Well, again, we believe that the auditor should always, that statute should always be given its full force and effect. The solution that we see is for it to only apply to a specific triennial period. But similar to the filing of a new complaint, it would halt any carry forward. The mandatory reappraisal would halt any carry forward.
Has your research shown that this has occurred in the past?
Yes, and I mean, it has occurred in this case, and there's another case decided by this court in 1994 called Oberlin Manor, where the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals rendered a decision only for tax year 1982. The property owner filed a motion for reconsideration before the Board of Tax Appeals. It was appealed then to this court because the Board of Tax Appeals refused to carry it forward through the triennium. The decision of this court only carried forward that value through the relevant triennium, and it stated so in the decision, although the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals took place in 1988, and in fact, the final decision didn't even take place until 1992. The mandatory reappraisal period in that case dealt with Lorain County was 1985. Mm-hmm. So the court did at that time halt the carry forward through the relevant triennial period.
Did the court address the conflict then between the auditor's duty and the carry-forward duty in that case, or did it fall short of directly reaching that issue?
I believe it fell short of directly reaching that.
So you want us to address the conflict in this case?
Yes, that's what we would ask the court to do.
Mr. Lindholm, is this situation one that's unique to this particular market with declining values over time? Would you be asking for the same kind of relief if the reappraisal was significantly higher than it was, if it had gone up from the agreed value earlier?
Yes, and we believe under the continuing complaint jurisdiction under 5715.19D, you could file, but we don't see why there's any reason why you would have to file if you're satisfied with the value of the auditor. That seems to be an extra burden upon a taxpayer, so you have to go ahead and file a complaint to defend a value of the auditor. And as we mentioned before, that leaves the auditor completely out of the process.
If the carry forward number from the previous the agreed carry-forward number was lower, wouldn't you be asking for that number to be applicable instead of the new appraisal?
Yeah, I believe we would, if I understand your question correctly. Because in this particular case, I guess if I could apply it to the facts of this case, maybe it would shed some light on it. Because in this case, the first tax year at issue was 2002. We did not believe we would have to file a complaint to defend the auditor's value of $17,900,000. We settled upon a value of $20,100,000. We believe that would only carry forward through 2002, 2003, and 2004. Unfortunately, the auditor's value of $17,900,000 was ignored by the county, even though the county was the ones who actually instituted the carry forward from the Board of Tax Appeals. So at that point in time, I guess the appellant was surprised to learn that it was not limited to the specific triennial period. And so we believed under the continuing complaint jurisdiction that we had to go back and request a hearing. And we always argued this as a matter of law before the County Board of Revision, that the mandatory reappraisal should apply.
Well, let me ask it differently then. You had an 02 number agreed to of 17 million. I'm sorry, of 20 million.
20,100,000.
Yeah, 20,100,000. And that was being carried forward.
Yes.
The new appraisal that came out for 06 was at 17, 05?
05, yes.
Was $17 million.
Yes.
Had that number in 05 instead been $24 million, what would your position be?
We would have not had an issue with it at that point in time.
You'd have gone along with the $24 million number.
Well, no, we would have had an issue with that, with the value being higher than what was stipulated to in the settlement. And we could have gone through the continuing complaint jurisdiction to challenge that number. But at that point in time, because the lower number was lower, we believe it was a mandatory appraisal applied.
Isn't that inconsistent with the rule that you're asking this court to adopt?
I believe, yeah, there may be some inconsistency there.
So would you have us not adopt the rule that I just mentioned in my first question to you, or is it one of those situations that you take the bad with the good?
I believe I would agree with Your Honor, and that you would have to take the bad with the good. I just really do not believe if there's a favorable number by the auditor that you should have to go in and file a complaint to protect that number.
But in the event it was a $24 million 2005 assessment, or even 3 years after that, let's say 2008, you could challenge that value through the normal process of how a business or a taxpayer challenges the auditor's valuation, correct?
You always could.
You always have that option. So that takes care of your $24 million appraisal or anything that might not be in the ballpark that the property owner would deem appropriate.
Yes, Your Honor, and that would, although you might have to live with that number, you could go ahead and challenge that number if you had not filed more than one time in a particular triennial period. Mm-hmm. You just have to go through the normal rules of filing.
Okay.
The appellant also believes that auditors across the state do not uniformly apply this rule. In fact, in Cuyahoga County, they only carry it forward through the triennial period. Franklin County happens to carry it forward all the way until the Board of Tax Appeals decision is rendered. I believe that if the court established a bright line rule, it would help the county auditors across the state to know how far they should carry it forward or how far they should not carry it forward. It's something that we have seen, and obviously in Franklin County, they've elected to carry it forward all the way through the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals. Another argument that we would like to make, and the court has addressed the issue of not according presumptive validity to a prior year value. In this case, if a value is carried forward for 4, 5, 6, 7 years, and we actually see that time period increasing because of the longer time period to have Board of Tax Appeals decisions processed, one number that goes all the way back 4, 5, 6, 7 years carries forward all the way to whenever the Board of Tax Appeals gets around to processing the decision. That to me seems to go against the principle that because of changing market conditions or sales or whatever the auditor may use to determine a value, that's all ignored. And that's one of the purposes of the mandatory reappraisal every 6 years, is to take account of all of those factors.
Does it make any difference in this case that your client stipulated to the $20.1 million? Or should we take that into account as opposed to a determination by some outside force like an earlier
appraisal? We stipulated to that value. However, at the time we stipulated to the value, we knew of the 2005 value of $17,900,000. So because of what we believe the prior case law would reflect, that it would only carry forward through the same triennium of 2003 and 2004.
At the time of the stipulation, you knew that the auditor had calculated the then current triennium at $17.9 million.
We did. We knew that for 2005. We didn't know that yet for 2006. In fact, we weren't made aware that the auditor had also decided to carry it forward to 2006 until late December 2006, when our client received its property tax bill.
Mr. Lindholm, is this the only one of the rules of construction when we have statutes that potentially can conflict, is that we read them in peri materia, giving effect to both? Is it your position that this is the only way that the statutes can be read so that they both have effect?
Yes, and we obviously would assert that the statutes are in conflict, and there has to be some way to resolve it. So county auditors, property owners, administrative agencies, and courts all have the ability to have something to grasp onto. And I think I'm surprised that this question has actually not been before the court because of the litigation, all the property tax litigation. But we believe that would be the best way to solve this, would be to give a direction to everyone to say when a carry forward actually applies. And of course, I believe opposing counsel is going to argue that under 5715.19D, that it should be as finally determined. But as finally determined is going to roll over a mandatory reappraisal period one way or the other, whether it's to the benefit or to the detriment of the property owner.
You're saying this is the bright line rule that is more practicable?
Yes, we think this is a more practical solution for all the parties.
Mr. Lindholm, if we agree with your position, does this matter go back to the board for a redetermination, or is it over?
It actually would go back to the Board of Tax Appeals, with instructions to remand the county auditor. Back to the Board of Tax Appeals with instructions for them to remand to the county auditor to institute the value of the mandatory reappraisal of $17,900,000 for 2005.
Would the school board have an opportunity to submit evidence at that point or at any point?
They may, under the continuing complaint jurisdiction under 50, 715.19D, they may have that opportunity.
At what juncture would they do that?
Well, they would. I believe that they would have to request a hearing.
Before the board?
Before the Board of Revision.
Mr. Lindholm, just one question. With the stipulation, particularly since your client knew at the time the stipulation was entered of the new 2005 value at $17 million, couldn't your client have expressly covered that within the stipulation so that we'd avoid this case and this dispute altogether?
It could have been covered, but it was done as any stipulation has normally been done before the Board of Tax Appeals. And the Board of Tax Appeals used its general language of carry forward according to law. And when we saw that language, carry forward according to law, we assumed that it only went through the relevant triennial period and that it would not apply to a mandatory reappraisal period or the year following that mandatory reappraisal period.
Thank you.
And I believe I've run out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Kreitz?
Chief Justice Brown, may it please the court. My name is Allison Kreitz, and I am representing the Dublin City Schools Board of Education. Thank you. In 2006, the parties to the present appeal executed this document that I hold in my hand through their respective counsel. It is the stipulation of value for 2002. The parties also agreed upon the application of that value. First, they agreed that the auditor should correct his tax records. And second, more significantly, they agreed upon the following language. It is further stipulated that such values be carried forward according to law.
But that's the crux of the case, isn't it? Your interpretation of what the law is different than what their interpretation of law is, and apparently differs by county. So how can we bind them on something when they believe the law was X and you apparently are trying to claim the law is Y?
Yes, the BTA didn't choose this language, though. The parties did. And when the parties chose that language, there was no distinguishment in the law that would require the carryover value to
there
cut
is no
off.
Meeting of the minds if they thought that the triennial period ended with the auditor's reappraisal. There's no meeting of the minds then.
That would have been appellant's mistake, because the BTA had already issued a decision, Sweatland, before the parties entered into its stipulation.
If they had entered that stipulation into Cuyahoga County, they'd had a different result?
If Cuyahoga County is not carrying forward the values through a reappraisal year, then they are not following the case law of the BTA.
Okay, what is your case law that says that that goes through, despite any revaluations, 6 years from hence?
That was a decision by the BTA. Referred to as Sweatland, the case is David W. Sweatland Building Co. Limited versus Cuyahoga County Board of Revision. And that was issued on June 30th, 2005 by the BTA.
And that's never been appealed. That issue's not been appealed. This is a first impression here.
Yes, that is a first impression here in terms of the specific reappraisal year. However, this court has already addressed triennials generally. It addressed them both in inner city, also in royal financing, and held that the carryover provision continues through the triennials. This court's decisions did not distinguish the triennials, but neither does the statute. With respect to filing a complaint under 5715.19D, there is no difference between the first or second triennial. With respect to the carryover and the continuing complaint, there is likewise no distinguishment because they're not even mentioned.
So, counsel, if you're saying that they've agreed to that number of $20 million, and that's going to carry forward regardless of what the county auditor then reappraises that property to be, correct?
It carries forward to the determination year unless they would have filed a fresh complaint. They had the opportunity.
Okay, so you're saying that there is an out for them to be relieved of the benefit of the bargain that you mentioned originally, and that is then to challenge what? The appraisal or challenge the dollar amount that they stipulated to?
It would be a challenge to the stipulation that they just agreed to. And the appellant had three opportunities to do that. We consider them to be safeguards built into the law. They had the opportunity to request a continuing complaint hearing, which they did for 2005. They likewise could have filed a complaint for 2005, but they didn't do that. Instead, they filed one for tax year 2006. Once they had these safeguard opportunities, though, they failed to take advantage of them. They didn't present any evidence of value for a value other than what they had just agreed to at the BTA.
Well, they agreed to it, in essence, retroactively.
They agreed to it as of 2002, carried forward according to law. And when they signed that agreement, the law did not distinguish for a reappraisal year.
And if they were only under the impression that this was going to be good until the auditor did the reappraisal, there would be no need for them to challenge the figure that they just stipulated to.
They could have specified in the stipulation had they intended that.
I understand that. What they could have done. But what I'm saying is what they did, and we're trying to discern what according to law means here, and I guess we'll be the arbiter of that. But getting to your original premise here is they agreed to it, so they're stuck with it. But according to what Justice Stratton emphasized, there was no meeting in the minds. So what I'm trying to understand is how could they have challenged the $20 million that they just agreed to? And you say that if they didn't like that, they could have just, in the next breath, filed a complaint to challenge that.
Certainly, they could have. They were not stuck with that value.
Well, they also said that they knew that as of the reappraisal, they were going to get a $17 million value.
They did know of the reappraisal, then they should have.
So what was there to challenge if they thought we're going to be stuck with the $20 million until the $17.1 million kicks in? Why would they go through a challenge?
It was not reasonable for them to believe that this would cut off at the reappraisal year. There is no case law to support that. There is no...
All right, let me just approach it a different way then maybe. Would the approach that you're advocating result in disparate treatment for individual taxpayers that are similarly situated? In other words, you have one taxpayer, such as we have here, that has a $20 million stipulation as to the value, and you want that to carry forward. And we've got another property owner owning an identical piece of property that did not have a challenge and did not enter into a stipulation. And when the auditor's reappraisal rolls around, they've got a 17.1 valuation for their property. Meanwhile, property owner A is still paying the $20 million price tag. Do you see that as being a disparate treatment?
No, because this is no different than any other decision issued by the BTA. In any case where you have the BOR, the BTA, or even this court issuing a decision that replaces the reappraised value for the auditor, the General Assembly clearly intended for the decisions of this court, the BTA, and the BOR to replace those values, whether it be the reappraised value from the auditor under 5713 or not.
Counsel, let me ask you about the General Assembly's intent here, a little maybe broader question. In terms of the legislative purpose, what would be the legislative purpose to have this particular section, the carry forward, override the legislative requirement for a triennial statistical update or a six-year actual appraisal? What would be the purpose in the legislature allowing this section to override those mandatory valuations?
Well, it was intended as a convenience for the parties, and it was also intended to avoid any sort of undue burden upon the courts, so they wouldn't have to keep analyzing the same case every triennial. It's just a convenience, though. If the parties wanted to disregard the convenience, they're totally open to do so. They can request a hearing on the continuing complaint. They could file a fresh complaint and disregard that convenience if they did not intend for that value to carry forward. But much like the property owner in Inner City, sometimes they do want it to carry forward, and they would focus on the plain and clear language of the statute each succeeding year, any ensuing year, that would require that carryover to go over to the final determination unless the party acted. Again, it was intended as a convenience, but they aren't stuck with it.
Counsel, what statute are you referring to when you talk about this is the General Assembly's intent for your position? What statute are you referring to?
The General Assembly's intent with respect to the carryover provisions is within 5715.19.
Particularly what? What subsection are you
referring to? Subsection D specifies the carryover and the continuing complaint.
And then how do you look at 571301B?
Which refers to the auditor's duty to reappraise every 6 years. It's a two-step process. And both of those steps were satisfied in the present case, which are demonstrated by the facts in the present case. First, the auditor reappraised the property as part of his 2005 mass reappraisal. He certified that value for 2005. He thus fulfilled his duty under 5713.01. And again, this was the first of two steps. In the second step, the BTA issued its decision accepting the party's stipulation of value. That decision was then carried forward by the auditor through to the determination gear. This is not a conflict. The statutes do not occur simultaneously. They occur in a sequence. In fact, there was the better part of a year between the application of the auditor's certification and the BTA decision, which overrode that auditor's reappraisal.
Counsel, if the reappraisal was not a $17 million figure, but was a $30 million figure, where would the school board be?
The Board of Education has been on both sides of this issue, and with respect to triennials, this court has held that it carried through regardless of what the Board of Education argued at that point. The idea here is to follow the plain and clear language of the statute. That should be the bright line rule that we are looking at here.
So you're saying that the Board of Education then would not have the opportunity to challenge the carryover based on the new, much higher appraisal?
The Board of Education could have filed a fresh complaint for 2005.
Okay.
They could have done that for 2006 had they not done it for 2005,
right.
And so on, one per triennial.
So you are in agreement or not with the position of the appellant here that you take the good with the bad. You're going to be subject to the increase or the decrease of the property value. Is that you're willing to do that as well?
Yes, but the good and the bad should come from a plain reading of the clear meaning of the statute. It should not come from adding or ignoring words, which is contrary to the legislative intent.
What are the words that are either added or ignored here?
The statute specifically provides 5715.19D, each succeeding year, any ensuing year, until the complaint is finally determined. So the appellant is asking you all to ignore the word each, any, until finally determined. And it's asking you to insert words into the statute that would require a cutoff at the reappraisal year, when they had the option to do that for themselves.
And is that no matter how long it takes for the complaint to be resolved?
If the parties wish for that carryover value to continue to the final determination, they can leave it that way. But if they wish to cut off that convenience, they always have the power to file a complaint once per triennial or more if certain exceptions apply. And they also always have the right to prosecute the continuing complaint.
Well, I guess I failed to say, how is that a convenience? You said one of the reasons that the legislative intent was to allow for convenience of the court so that we're not relitigating. Well, I would imagine that's also a convenience for the agencies involved here. And it seems to me that your approach generates a continuing course of litigation where there's objection after objection, depending on the appraised value.
Our approach is with respect to the facts of this case, because in this case, had the parties intended to cut off that carry forward language that they
included. I understand that, but we're not just concerned with your case. We've
yes.
got to, you know, have a rule here that is going to apply to other parties that are similarly situated. So I know your argument is they could have maybe fashioned their language differently, but let's just say they didn't.
Okay.
Okay. We've got what we've got here, which I believe is probably pretty standard language.
It really depends. What is normal is dependent upon the parties. stipulations oftentimes do have different values set for different years. And they also provide which years the stipulation is to apply to. That's not uncommon either. The parties always had that choice. But let's just say, as you had said, that we're already in this position where the parties have not done that. They don't have to live with that values if they don't want to. It's just intended to be a convenience. But if they do want to cut it off, they have the power to do that.
Either by agreement or in contained in the stipulation or litigation.
Yes, they can file another complaint and disregard the convenience.
Ms. Kreitz, what would be the purpose of the auditor going and doing a reappraisal if there is a continuing agreed value in place?
The auditor does have that duty still under 5713, and it would be a reference, perhaps, in this case, the appellant used that value as a reason to file a continuing complaint hearing, to request one. And once they requested that, they could have come in with evidence to support a lower value, something in the $17 million range, if they felt that the auditor's reappraised value was accurate, but they didn't.
But if the parties had agreed and there's a continuing value, the auditor could very well say, no point in doing a reappraisal.
The auditor still has a duty to do that, even if it is going to be overridden, like any other circumstance where you have a BOR or a BTA or a decision of this court that is going to override the auditor's reappraised value.
And when the auditor does that, one party or the other is almost certain to initiate a new complaint.
So long as that is provided under the statute, and it is, once per triennial, at least a party can file a fresh complaint.
Thank you.
I see that my time has expired. May I have a brief moment to conclude?
You may.
Thank you. The parties could argue all day about how they would like the law to be rewritten, but since the carryover provision of 5715.19D is plain, clear, unambiguous, and constitutional, both in the way it's written and has been implied, this is a policy decision for the General Assembly, not an assignment of error for this court. Thank you.
Mr. Lindholm, you may have 1 minute.
First, with respect to counsel for the Board of Education's assertion that there is no case law to base our argument on, again, I would point the court to the Oberlin Manor decision from 1994, where this court specifically decided to only carry forward the values to 1982, 1983, and 1984, which was the relevant triennial period, where if they would have considered the date of decision of the Board of Tax Appeals, which was 1988, and upon appeal, it was stretched out to 1992, this court did not do that. And even in that decision, they mentioned the possibility of changing market conditions as a factor of, well, we can carry this forward because we don't see any difference. Again, that's an argument that I made previously with regard to not giving presumptive validity to a prior year tax number, which happens if like in this case, a carry forward goes through multiple years, reappraisals are ignored for not only 6 years, but 12 years. In fact, the subject property, I believe, would not have been reappraised for 10 years if this decision of the county auditor is allowed to stand. Also, with respect to us not presenting any evidence before the county auditor, we always made this argument as a matter of law because we believed that the mandatory reappraisal should be given its full force and effect. We were consistent both in our 2005 and our 2006 cases in arguing that the mandatory reappraisal should be given its full force and effect. And in summary, I would just request that the court reverse the unreasonable and unlawful decision of the Board of Tax Appeals and have this court instruct the County Board of Revision to value the property at $17,900,000 for both 2005 and 2006. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lindholm. The next matter this morning is Cleveland Metropolitan Bar Association versus Rita Johnson.